Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm here with Di Morrissey to talk about her new book, The Red Coast. Welcome, Di.
Thank you, John.
Now, it's one of my great pleasures to get to talk to you every time you release a new book. And it's been, what is it, three or four books in a row, I think, I've been able to sit across from you and have a bit of a chat. And it's, you know, to be talking to one of Australia's best-selling authors, but consistently best-selling authors. I almost wanted to try to pick your brain as to how you do it every time I sit, but I'm not going to do that this time. I did that last time. I'm going to pull back a little bit.
And I had no answer for you, as I recall.
Well, it is something. Sometimes it just comes organically, doesn't it? You know, that's what you do.
Yes. I mean, I've always wanted to write books since I was little, and it's something that's just kind of there, and it's, you know, we all get a gift, and I can't explain how I do it. I mean, you can hone skills and things, but you can either sing and paint and dance and write or not.
Yeah.
Really, in a word, sorry.
So this is your third book set up in Broome and the Broome area.
Kimberley, yeah.
Where do you, is this something that keeps drawing you back because of the place? Does the place call you? Is it something like that?
It does. Can I name drop?
But
Missy Higgins is also a Broomite, and Missy has a home up there. And Missy was also, along with John Butler, very instrumental in the fight about over there stopping this gas hub on the pristine red coast of the Kimberley. And I sat down with Missy last couple of months ago, and we were just talking about it, and I said, why do you fight so hard for a place where you have no roots? And she kind of said, well, why do you? And then Missy said, you know, it's the first time I came here, I just kind of felt I'd found my spiritual home. And that just sums it up. It's just, and I was living in Byron Bay when I first went to Broome, and it was like these two isolated points of the coast on opposite sides of the country just resonated with me, and I was torn between both of them.
You had one very wet, one very dry.
Yes. Oh, the wet season in Broome is spectacular.
So the Red Coast opens up with a bookseller, a little bit out of her comfort zone, giving a talk on the Kimberley Sun, no doubt.
the boat.
Yeah, the reference to the previous book. These books aren't connected, are they? They're separate.
No, it's not it's not a sequel, but I mean, it's set in that area, and there's maybe a couple of overlapping characters.
Yeah, and we get a sort of a quick introduction to Broome, and it's. Did you have to go there to update yourself on what was going on in Broome today?
Oh, any excuse to go to Broome.
I have to go to Broome again. Yeah.
Of course.
The bookshop exists, doesn't it?
Yes, there's a great bookshop in Broome. Yeah. But it did go through a lot of hiccups. And 2 years ago, or 18 months ago, when I was in Broome, the bookshop had closed because it had changed hands. But subsequently, it has reopened. And I thought it was tragic that the bookshop in Broome had closed. So I thought, oh, I'll just reopen it in my next book. But it's now reopened again, yeah.
And so you've been fighting on different fronts as well. You've been fighting on the East Coast and on the West Coast. And a lot of those fights have made it into this book, or at least the mechanisms and the... was it important to write this book at this moment when everyone is... You know, it seems to be laws are changing, people are getting lax or lazy, and miners are getting into places they shouldn't be getting. Is this your attempt to try and wake people up and go, this is still happening?
Well, I hope so. But it also, I find that things that upset and concern and interest me also affect, you know, readers the same. So I like to kind of, I think, well, if it worries me and upsets me or intrigues and makes me feel passionate, then hopefully it will readers as well. But I mean, essentially what, you know, a book is there to entertain. But I did feel very strongly about what is happening. I mean, you know, this Adani coal mine is ridiculous. What are our politicians thinking? And they're only still discovering The ancient rock art, the which is now being dated to 65,000 years of human occupation. So who we don't even know what's still out there, and by the time we do know, or we know what we've lost, it's too late. With the great mining, you know, companies gouging the land. There are appropriate places. I mean, the issue over the James Price Point fight in Broome, which was in a remote place, and a lot of the country didn't really hear about it, except until people like Missy Higgins and John Butler and Pete Garrett and people got involved as well, was that it was just in an inappropriate place, and that you know, this pristine coast is going to be dug up, and the town of Broome, which is tourism, again, like the Barrier Reef, they're going to devastate this with it just turning it into a mining town and FIFOs, and it just would have been a tragic loss, let alone what it could possibly do to the pearling industry. We have the most magnificent pearls in the world. So it just seemed like it's so insane. Why do they, and after 8 years, the people of Broome tied themselves to machinery, had people come in and fought tooth and nail to stop where they were going to put it. And in the end, the petroleum company just said, oh, we'll just do it offshore. So, like, why didn't you do that 8 years ago?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, all this angst. And it ripped the guts out of the town. I mean, families were fighting. You know, son is a tradie, can work with the mining company, where his parents don't want to see it happen. And it really did split families apart. It split the town apart. It split the politics of, you know, down to in the whole state, let alone everywhere around the world where people came to help.
When were you first there? When was the first time you visited, which then set the seed for your first book, Tears of the Moon, on Broome, that is, first book on Broome? Like, how long ago? And have you seen Broome change over that time?
The first time I went to Broome and went, this place is amazing and I have to come back, was 1983.
Right.
When I was filming for Good Morning Australia, and then Bill Peach, the old journalist, had started a Bill Peach air cruise, one of the early tourism things of flying to remote places and just dropping into stations and properties and all around Australia. And so I went with a film crew and filmed it, and we had 48 hours in Broome. And it just, I've got to come back here. I didn't know why, but, you know, just kind of filed it away. And the same thing happened with my first book when on that same 1983 dropped into Longreach. And I met R.M. Williams, and he was raising money with his endurance horse ride to build the Stockman's Hall of Fame. And, you know, certain places just kind of lodge in your heart. And I just went, no. There's just like the ding went off. I have to come back, and then I didn't go back until I was writing books, and then out of the blue, you know, something just happens, and I just know, and I suddenly, you know, this. I walked past in Sydney. I walked past the Paspaley Pearls showroom, that new showroom that opened, and I just went in with Pearls, Broome, and I just got on a plane and went there. And just, you know, walked around, talked to people, and it was still a bit sleepy, and, you know, but that was in 94, so 10 years sort of had elapsed.
The Red Coast opens up with a tour of Broome, because this fella goes off a plane and gets into a driver take, they want a bit of a tour, show me the town, he says. And in that, you do refer to people trying to keep the heritage buildings, and has that succeeded?
More or less, yes, thanks to Alastair McAlpine, Lord McAlpine, in the...
I read that, so that's real.
Yes, 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 that's all real. He was an amazing man, and we owe an awful lot to him for seeing the beauty in the old Pearling Masters' homes, the lattice, that very particular look of the architecture of Broome, which is very practical because it's cool and it's shady and whatever. So that's all preserved. And there's sort of newer resorts and the tourism. People are very conscious, though, of trying to keep that tourism side of it. But, you know, Broome is spreading, and there's now, like, some pretty unattractive housing estates, you know, being built out in the outskirts of Broome and stuff. Essentially, you know, Broome is very conscious of its unique look and an appeal. But it's also practical. It's the only way to live in the tropics, and it's got to be cyclone-proof and wet season-proof, and it's all red dirt. And so you have to, you know, cut your jib to fit the sail or whatever they say.
We've sort of spoken around the story, but can you give me a quick rundown of what the novel's about so that people listening can have some idea?
Oh, well, I suppose it's a... It's a the story of a young woman with a young son, 10, who or 14, no, he's 14, 10, a young teenager, who's divorced and has been travelling and then lands in Broome and feels that same thing. This is an amazing place, sees an empty bookshop for sale and decides to buy it. And she reinvents her life in Broome. She's got the issue of her husband, the boy's father, is French, and so the boy is being brought up by this rather dominating father in France. And so he leaves this French world and comes to Broome for the, you know, 3 months, several months of the year and stuff. And she feels she's really found her place in the world, and everything is starting to, you know, fall into place when this issue of the town explodes over the fight to put this big mining development there, which will destroy the coastline, which is, you know, sacred land and indigenous land, and her best friend is an indigenous journalist. So it's this story of conflict that, you know, splits a town, splits families, splits lovers, splits people, and this fight, but it's also her, how that changes her, mm-hmm. and her growth and development, and how it affects all of the characters within the book.
There's a character who is flying in doing filming, and are you is that something from your past that you're sort of bringing in, that aspect of someone coming in and falling in love with the place because of a job?
Yes, because cameramen have some. My partner is a cameraman, and, you know, I've kind of grown up in film and television, and I just think they have a particular eye for visuals, and I thought it would be nice to use a cameraman's viewpoint to describe rather than just have an endless description, this is what this part of the coast looks like. To see it through the eyes of a cameraman, it was a lot more visual way of describing it. And also it was a means to get to places that are virtually inaccessible. Mm. That part of that Kimberley coast is, unless you've got a plane, you can't get into, or a chopper, or the little zodiacs that go up some of the rivers. But so I just thought he was kind of an interesting, dashing character.
And the pearling industry there, which you touch on, and they drive up the coast to an old family who's been running in a particular bay up there. Is that all?
Yes, that's true. That's true. The Paspalis developed the big commercial side of the for the last sort of 30 years of pearling, but the original sort of when the Japanese Mikimoto came in and the Japanese were doing the first seeding of pearls, but working on the pearl farm on the boats was this guy's grandfather and great grandfather, and so he began to watch and began to wonder what these Japanese were doing. So he went off with his brother, and that was the Brown family up in Signet Bay, and they started pearling, mm-hmm. and just picking up wild shell and trying to work out how pearls were formed by, you know, putting in a little piece of shell that became an irritant, so the shell then coats it with nacre, so that builds up, so that's where how pearls are then, you force the pearl shell to make pearls. And so then they started at Signet Bay, and it still carried on, and he worked with he brought his brother up, and the two Brown brothers and three Aboriginal men, and those families are still all connected. They're still all working on Signet Bay pearl farm, and they're just the most amazing stories, the most fantastic story. So they're actually, that all is real.
And that sense of there's a great sense that the books are, what's the name of the main character, my brain's gone,
Jackie,
she talks about how everyone's connected, you know, that,
yeah,
and then it goes out now, and there's a great sense of that when they do go north, and you get that sense that of the mob, you know, they're part of my mob, or they're connected to there, or my cousins over here. But it's not just the Aboriginal families. It's the long living.
The old Broomites,
yeah,
yes.
They have the same kind of sense up there.
Mm. Well, it's not only that, it's also there's the Chinese, Japanese, the Malays that came in as divers and stayed. I mean, Broom is our original multicultural, you know, town, and still is, and it's very, you know, it's very unique in that way.
So the fly-in, fly-out miners that would have come and disturbed all of that.
Yes, yes, and would have... you know, the plans that were mooted didn't sound very conducive to the harmony in Broome. There was a lot of conflict, but also in the main girl's character's personal life. I mean, she feels, you know, her family are in Sydney. She's got her son at school in France with a very dominating French family and mother-in-law, which is probably one of the reasons that she ended up leaving. And so she looks at the cohesiveness and the closeness. Broom families and family life is, you know, it's just quite unique, and it's very big and very bonded, and everybody has cook-ups and gets together and it's sing-alongs, and it's just kind of a Broom lifestyle. So... for her, you know, always feeling an outsider and the separation from her son brings another dimension, seeing all of this that slowly begins to change her life and her attitudes and her son's.
I've been talking to you for years about how you need to be getting kickbacks from the Broome tourist office for the books. And this is another one. I mean, you get off on the plane in Broome, and there are copies of your books in the airport and then in the bookshops there. and it is, you know, you've done quite a lot. I mean, I remember people who I've met who went to Broome based on Tears of the Moon.
Yes,
And this is another one which is going to do that, because I actually jumped onto reading it. I jumped onto Google Earth and just did that thing where you can go and wander around the town.
Yes,
and just to get some idea of it, because I, you know, it fascinated me.
You have to go, John. It's really amazing. People just love it, and you've got to spend a little time there. But it's not just Broome. Broome is like the gateway to the Kimberley. There's the, or, you know, people think of it as two separate places, but you know, Broome is the township in the Kimberley. You've got Derby, you know, you've got all those other places, but Broome is the visitor centre. But, you know, the horizontal waterfalls, the Mitchell Plateau, all of those. Now they've got all these posh cruises that go up, and then you can, you know, you stay on the boat, and then you can get the little zodiacs up into what were totally inaccessible places. And the fishing is amazing. The beach, Cable Beach. Yes, dear Malcolm,
So, yeah, I mean, this is a wonderful advertisement for that top end. I'm wondering, because you have sort of wandered in your fiction from coast to coast, up and down, where has your imagination wandered to now? After you've handed this in, it's now in shops, it's going to be out there for Christmas, the mind must start turning and looking around this great country, going, where can I sit my imagination this time?
Doesn't happen like that. I have to wait for some event happens. The place sort of chooses me. I don't put the pin in the map. I don't, you know, look
pin
at
the donkey,
where I should
tail
go.
The donkey.
Yeah, I don't, because I just, I don't know. I've always just been lucky in that by accident I've landed in places where I have fallen over the most amazing stories. So I know this is where I will set a book, the Opals or the, you know, the Barrier Reef or wherever. And so I had no intention of this, but it looks like I have just come back from Tasmania, and I have jumped again into a completely, you know, I was led there for other reasons, and came back because it was a place. I'm really a tropical outback little flower, and I got kind of intimidated. Like, I didn't like Norfolk Island, and the bleak history and the dark sadness and the convicts, and I thought, oh no. But I have been in Tasmania, and I've fallen over a different story, and I just think, oh, this is not what I expected. So I guess this is where I'll be. So I will be, you know, heading south.
Tasmania's so hot right now. This seems like the place where everyone's moving to.
Well, the food, yes, everybody. Well, the one of the reasons everybody is moving there, I'm told, is because of climate change, that the vineyards can't grow cold weather wine, so the Victorians are all moving to Tasmania. Vineyards everywhere. Very interesting what's happening. There's a migration of mainlanders.
So the service paradise of 2050.
I mean, I even met Americans this was the furthest place they could get away from President Trump. Was Tasmania. So it's unspoiled to a certain extent. So, and I mean, it's got wonderful, food, and all the spring flowers were out, and it is quite spectacular. But again, you can see that it's like with Broome, those, corporate vultures are hovering.
Mm.
And there's talk of high rises on the Hobart waterfront, and no.
Mm.
So, I mean, they have to fight it. I think they're a bit, I think the Tassie politicians, I mean, there's a few exceptions, I just feel like, oh, no, please stand up and fight. You don't know what you're in for, because it's all over Red Rover before you know what you've done half the time.
You mentioned Trump, and I've been asking different authors as they come through, what effect the last 12 months has had on your creative ability in this changing world where someone like Trump can become president of the United States? Has it affected you? Are you watching more TV or reading more articles?
I've had to take a chill pill.
Mm-hmm.
My two children live, and my grandchildren live in America. And I just became obsessive. It was like every morning I would get up and run to the machine and say, what the hell has he done tonight?
Yeah.
And because my ex-husband worked in the State Department, we were Foreign Service, I'm very aware of the inner workings in Washington. And to see how the State Department has been totally gutted, the man doesn't listen to anybody, it is quite scary. I wonder, the destruction and what he's doing with, never mind about, our safety, but I mean from the climate change, from every issue you name.
Pulling money from all these things.
How do we refix everything when the man is finally gone?
Mm.
The devastation, it is, I find that it is very worrying. I mean, and I feel, I worry about our politicians, that we are being kind of yet again sucked into fights that aren't ours, that we're being taken advantage of. And I just think Australia has to kind of stand on our own two feet. There's a little bit of that sense I could just see in Tasmania, how like everybody was moving in and the ground is shifting. And we have to be alert, and we have to be strong, and we do have to stand up. And I just think we're being taken advantage of, in a terrible way. Our politicians, don't even begin me on energy and the climate and the rest of it.
The thing is, the Red Coast is a great read just by itself, but it also does. It's a book to ask people to stand up and fight for what they believe in. It's got that in there as well.
Because I've seen it work, John, even in town.
Yeah.
People power does work.
You had the victory, didn't you?
We get afflicted by, well, what can we do as individuals when we're run by, a political agenda that we didn't actually sign up for, and suddenly everything changes and you go, what can we do? But we can.
Mm.
And so we really do have to mobilise a lot more and stand up to our representatives.
Di, thank you very much for coming in.
For preaching, but...
No, we need it.
Oh, it's just lovely to see you again, John.
And you can get all of Di's books at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.